the ways that I've grown from powerlifting are so immense that I didn't think I'm the only person experiencing this type of, like, these type of revelations through this crazy, like, what a bizarre, like, animalistic sport, you know? It's so, we're like animals, you know, like, we totally heave in and we're like, get amped up. And, but I loved it so much, and I want to talk about it with other women, but I also wanted to write about it because I think that sometimes the emotions that I'm trying to convey I don't say them well. I don't speak as well as I write. And I want people to experience what some of these emotions are that women go through when they are powerlifting, but in a way that they're experiencing it through reading, yes, through reading somebody else's experience. And so I had that idea of interviewing women, but taking their stories and writing an article about it, where taking what they're saying and I'm making a shape out of their experiences. So that way when readers experience it, they are experiencing the pain at the moment that the pain is being felt, like in the story.
Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting, a show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in. Aloha, my beautiful friends. Welcome back. We are on episode 94, and I have a really fun, different episode interview with my friend, Jana Moretti, who is an elite powerlifter and a writer. I mean, I thought this was so cool interviewing her because I told her I don't know a lot of writers. Like, people are a professional writer. Like, that's what she does for a living. She's also a professor of fiction writing at Santa Fe College. She actually has a few classes that she teaches. And I thought what was so amazing is how right now Jana is taking stories and interviews, kind of like what I do on the podcast, but she's taking it in a writing form. And I thought it was so cool to kind of see how she's trying to transform these stories, like you heard in the intro, transforming women's stories so that readers can feel sort of the emotion and all the life that went into the person that she's interviewing. It's sort of the same feeling I try to do with podcasting, except I'm not sure where it's going to take me. I'm usually on the same ride as you guys. So get ready to listen to a great episode with Jana. And she talks a little bit about actually writing, like, you know, how you can get started with writing if that's something you want to do. And, you know, it's something I wanted to actually get into more because writing is always going to be there. I think, like, you know, when you write something for years, it'll always be there. And maybe that might be a little, like, egotistical of me. I would want something to kind of be there for a few years. But I love the fact that I could create something like that and it would be here for a while. So it's a great episode to listen to. She gives some pointers on some things to think about if you want to get started in writing. And you know, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And if you're interested in online powerlifting, if you're getting started, intermediate, if you need some help, just more guidance on the platform and with your nutrition, we do both here at the gym. And, you know, really that's me and my husband's passion. I think we've probably dived a little deeper than the normal amount of people when it comes to exercise and nutrition. And we try to use all those tools to help better our members. And, you know, I try to apply those as much as I can here on this podcast so you guys can hear the cool stuff that we are learning and the things that will help level up your performance, as well as these interviews that are inspirational and really supposed to, you know, hopefully get you a little bit more motivated and help you feel like you're not alone out there. Because I think a lot of us sometimes are not surrounded by a group of powerlifters. If you are, that's fantastic. I feel like now I am with my gym. But, you know, before I really wasn't. I was really lucky to have a small group of people as my powerlifting journey kept going on. So if you're interested in powerlifting and you need some guidance, some online training or strength training, if you're just looking to actually build some muscle, head over to core256.com. You can actually even chat with me in the chat on the website. I'm the one who answers it. So if you got any questions, just drop me a little message in there and I'll message you back. And next week, I'm going to be announcing, just so you guys know, we're on not only our 4-year anniversary coming up on Halloween, but our 100th episode. I don't know how I lined that up because somehow or another I did, but I'm going to be doing a fun giveaway and I'm going to have a little contest on our Instagram and on our YouTube. So stay tuned. I'll announce more things. And the way that we're going to get to our 100th episode is that I'm going to put two more episodes each week. So the next episode we will be a little bit of a more fun, newsworthy type of episode. It's a little twist on what we've normally been doing. And then of course I'll have our normal long form podcast that will be coming up. So stay tuned if you want to have some giveaways. Now let's get it started with Jana. I didn't realize that you were a vet, like all these things. Like, I mean, I was like, this is so awesome. So I can't wait to kind of like dive into, all of sort of your experiences that have kind of put you where you are right now, because, you know, just looking at your page, I realized that you had like very similar to what I had. Like after I had my first kid, I was like, I'm dropping all that weight. And like I did, yeah. Right. And like you dropped like almost 40 pounds or something. And, yeah. And it, like, I felt like then I was really skinny and I didn't really necessarily like that. I thought I would. And I remember being like, I don't know if I, like, I want to be strong. Like, I don't feel like I feel strong. Like, I just feel like I look stringy. And that's when I really wanted to start training more, and more of a strength training. But what got you into powerlifting?
So I had always lifted weights, I guess, from the age of 15. I started lifting weights. I was a cheerleader, and it was supplemental to cheerleading.
Oh, that's good.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That doesn't always
happen.
And
I started bench pressing after I saw, and I took weightlifting in high school, and I saw a girl bench pressing one day, and she looked so strong in there. And I remember being like, oh, I could try that. I want to try that.
Yeah.
And I got on the bench and could barely do the bar.
Yeah.
But I just kept doing it, you know, just kept trying it over and over. So I really started weightlifting way back then when I was like 14, 15.
Yeah.
But I didn't squat or deadlift or anything like that. And then when I was in the Marines, I continued lifting weights, but always it was sporadic and it was in conjunction with having to do my running and my exercise before that day. So it wasn't really until after I had my daughter, actually, I went and joined a gym in Gainesville called The Arc, and they offer Olympic weightlifting and like HIIT high intensity training.
Yeah.
And that's where I started lifting weights consistently all the time. And I started doing my back squats and my deadlifts there. And it was when I had a friend who I used to do all these competitions with locally, her name's Lily. She helped me, like we would just lift together all the time. And she said, no, you have a really strong back squat. Do you know that about you? And I'm like, well, you know, I didn't really know. And she said, I have a friend who powerlifts. You should check that out. And I did. I just Googled it one day and was like, you know, I reached out to my brother who also lifts weights. And I was like, let's do a powerlifting competition. This was back in 2019. And he's like, all right, let's do it.
So oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I haven't. And as soon as I did the meet, it was actually with USAPL. And before now I do USPA, but I was hooked. I just did the meet and I did other meets. I did Olympic lifting meets and I did CrossFit local competitions, but nothing like zoned me into this obsession the way that powerlifting did. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
That's
like,
awesome.
I can't stop it.
Yeah. So when you first started out, did you follow a program or did you kind of do your own thing?
Oh yeah. So, my coach over at the Arc, I asked him if he had some sort of program that I could look at. And he gave me some, I think it's like Simply Strong he had me doing. And I did a little bit of that. And then I did the hybrid periodization or the hybrid performance through Steffi Cohen.
Yes,
I did
Steffi the app. Yep.
Yeah. And that made me really strong too.
Yeah.
And then after I did a little bit of that for both of them, I moved over to American Barbell Club after I did the meet because I was like, oh, I'm hooked. I love this. I'm going to go to this other gym that specializes in powerlifting. And I started working with Joe Corsi. And he was my coach for the first, I guess, almost 3 years, like 2.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And now I work with Blanca Villach. So I've been with her for nutrition now, I guess, maybe like 8 months or I don't know. But yeah, she's about to take me through my first competition with her in November.
Oh, nice. So you do nutrition with her right now?
nutrition. And so now she's my full-time coach. Nice. So I worked with Joe for the 2.5. Yeah. And then I, after working with Blanca a little bit, I wanted to have I wanted to centralize my coaching.
Yeah, totally.
With just one person. And I really liked her information that she was putting out there. And I really just wanted to work a little closer with her and have her guidance. Because she comes from the highest,
totally.
crazy levels of strength. So I felt like I wanted some of that feminine insight.
In my coaching. Yeah. So what has been different now with your training now than it was in the beginning?
Oh, so much stuff. I do really long off seasons now.
Oh, okay.
And I eat. So before I would do a 6-month off seasons and do a meet twice a year that way. But now after working with Blanca, she strategized. I just do what she tells me, but she's like, let's take a really long off season where you build your muscle. And then we're going to take a meet to test your numbers. And then we're going to do a big meet right after that. So we have fresh percentages to work off of. So I spent 8 or 9 months just building the muscle instead of doing the 6-month. Cause I really get itchy. I want to compete.
Yeah.
I get the itch, not itchy, but yeah, so that's a little different. So I have that really long off season. That's one of the main things. Another thing I'm noticing is that my drop sets are, now that I'm in an actual peak, my drop sets are really intimidating. I'm not as nervous about the high rep yet. I'm nervous about the drop sets because I'm having to go longer sets for more reps than I've ever done.
Oh yeah.
And it's exciting.
Yeah.
And I'm scared.
And so you're drop setting for hypertrophy, right? So you're working up to something and then for anybody listening, drop sets normally is you're going to work a certain weight for whatever reps and then you drop down in weight and work as many reps as you can or a prescribed amount of reps and then drop down again and drop. I've seen somebody strip down a leg press drop set and they had 9 plates and they drop set 9 plates.
Oh.
You know how long you're lifting for? It's ridiculous.
That's so long.
So yeah, that was oh my gosh. Yeah. Dude, I could never do that. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of benefits to something like that, but it's daunting in the back of my mind. I think about those. I'm like, oh my gosh, this totally sucks. It's going to be so hard. That's kind of funny. That's how you're feeling.
Yeah. Luckily mine are. So my last ones were 4x4, I think.
Okay.
And then I do paused drop sets on that too. Oh. So, I know it's, and the weights are not before my old drop sets would be a lot lower and these drop sets are a lot higher percentages than what I was used to, before. So, anyway.
Yeah. That keeps
it great. It's hard. It's challenging.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's so, I think it's funny. I want to tell everybody how we met, right? So, she approached me to be in an article, which by the time this comes out, the article will have came out with Sisters of Iron. And so we were, we clicked and we hit it off and we did our interview. And I thought it was very similar. I think the way that you almost interviewed me, I probably talked way too much, but the way that we interview each other is very similar. But, what I think is interesting that you have, as far as your background, I don't think a lot of people have, is that you you're a writer. I mean, you are a professional writer. Not only you're a professional writer, you are a professor of fictional writing, or is it several different? Okay. Yeah. So fictional writing at Santa Fe College, correct?
Yeah. I teach fiction and I also teach intro to composition writing. So argumentative, academic argument writing. Mm-hmm. And I've also taught poetry, although I feel like I'm a little out of my depths with the poetry.
Really? I saw that you had written a few poems, at least the ones I saw that were published in some of your articles. And that's what led me to realize, I was like, oh, she was a vet, because one of the articles was about leaving your M169A or the,
M16A2. Yeah. Well, it was fiction.
And I was like, oh, is that for real? But then I realized, I think the website's called Beyond Fiction or something to that nature too.
Yeah.
But they're short stories, correct? They're short stories. Maybe you can describe
short
a little
stories.
Bit. Yeah.
They're based off of real life events that happened, but I fictionalized them. It's actually interesting. I used to write all the time. When I was younger, I started writing like very, very young. I wrote my first book at the age of 8, I bound it together with construction paper and yarn, you know? And I wrote for so long, and then in high school, I was like edgy and whatever, like annoyingly angsty. And I wrote all the time. And then when I went into the Marines, I actually stopped writing for a long time. And it's not because of time or not having access to it. It was more about, I think that time, like writing for me, I have to come from a space of being open, non-judgmental, and a little vulnerable. And I think that time in my military service, I don't even think I had access to that level of thinking when I was in the military. And so the writing I did, or it just wasn't anything where I could invest myself intellectually or emotionally. And it wasn't until college, actually, that I came back to writing. So I went to college later in life, though, at the age of 29, and I started writing. And some of my love for writing came back. And I was also studying a ton of Russian literature. I love Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. So I was reading these beautiful books and was like, you know, I just really like, I want to write. I want to do this again. So I started exploring fiction. And I realized that I used fiction as a way to process some of the things, just like life, you know, just processing life things. And it's actually a way that I've distanced myself from having to process, events that have happened or a way of exploring how things could be done differently.
Interesting.
And I didn't realize that until now, many years later. Like when I do my writing now, I'm more in the nonfiction world because I feel like I can look at it and own things instead of needing that distance.
Yeah.
But fiction is still really fun for playing in the world.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. And so you decided you wanted to teach.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So
that's a whole different field. You know what I mean?
It's completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got out of the Marines and then I actually was an electronic technician. I worked in hospitals and I would fix nurse call systems, the Code Blue. Yeah. I would program those and fix those. And then, my husband and I, the post 9/11 GI Bill came out. And so that was a way of being able for us to go to college, but also have a living stipend. So we're like, let's just go to college and do this, you know, so we went in our, I was 29, I guess he was 27 when that happened. And, so we were doing that together. And then after we graduated, I wanted to keep going because I love school. I love being in the classroom. I love talking about analyzing. I'm really cerebral. I'm always analyzing things and being, I don't know, I'm in my head a lot, which is cool and exciting, but also neurotic and weird.
There's definite benefits and drawbacks to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's the double-edged sword there. Totally. But I wanted to keep going. And so I went for my master's and I switched. So my undergrad's actually in political science.
Yeah.
And I have all these minors too in philosophy and history and peace and conflict studies. And I almost minored in Arabic and I almost minored in chemistry because I just loved all these classes that it was too much. But I went for English for my master's because by that point I realized I loved writing and I wanted more time exploring writing. And then I went for my master's fine arts here at University of Florida down in Florida. I applied to all these fiction programs and nonfiction. And when I got accepted here, we were like, oh, we gotta move down here. So while I was in the program here, part of what they do is they have you teach as part, they fund your program and then they teach you how to teach. Oh, and so I was teaching lower level college classes. And luckily, I found a job right after that where I can continue teaching.
Yeah.
So here I am.
Yeah, that's amazing. So how did that tie into you getting started with Sisters of Iron? Because we were talking about this, but it's almost like your two loves now are sort of married in this area. So tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, I'm so excited about it. So I've been brainstorming for a long time and I've been trying to write. I've been writing some fictional They're not good yet, but they will be one day. So they're on their way. I've been writing some fiction, some short stories about powerlifting women. And I decided that I'm so inspired by the real life story, and I'm so interested in how people come to powerlifting, that I want to talk with other women about how they got to powerlifting, what it means to them. And I also thought, I'm not an anomaly in my experience with powerlifting, where it's just so heightening. I've grown. I mean, this is an easy way to describe it. The ways that I've grown from powerlifting are so immense that I didn't think I'm the only person experiencing this type of, like, these type of revelations through this crazy, like, what a bizarre, like, animalistic sport, you know? It's so, we're like animals, you know, like, we totally hate it and we're like, get amped up. And, but I loved it so much, and I want to talk about it with other women. But I also want to write about it, because I think that sometimes the emotions that I'm trying to convey I don't say them well. I don't speak as well as I write. And I want people to experience what some of these emotions are that women go through when they are powerlifting. But in a way that they're experiencing it through reading, yes, through reading somebody else's experience. And so I had that idea of interviewing women, but taking their stories and writing an article about it, where I shape their experiences. Like, it's not a transcript, but I'm taking what they're saying and I'm making a shape out of their experiences. So that way when readers experience it, they are experiencing the pain at the moment that the pain is being felt, like in the story, like Latasha Cleaver's recent post. When I wrote her article, I had envisioned, like, we have experiences that are happening and then the lowest, like, hardest tragedy that could experience, and it's, so it's like this V shape, but then her ascension into who she is now. And yeah, so I tried to have that, what she told me, shaped into this way. So anyway, this is a long way to describe that I had all these ideas, and then I reached out to Susie, the owner of Sisters of Iron, and I just said, hey, I have this project and I want to be affiliated with your company because I love this idea of Sisters of Iron being a camaraderie based. It's not, it feels like it's part of, you're joining some sort of group when you're, like, aligned with these women. They're all super supportive. And so she was just like, yeah, I love it. Let's do it.
Totally.
Yeah, you just do it. I'm like, oh, yes. So now I get to do the writing and the lifting at the same time, which is so exciting.
Well, I just love the way that you describe it, because I feel like that is missing from our community, you know, having this story being told, right? But it takes the skill of the person who's writing. And that's, it's funny because we're kind of opposite in that way. Like, I don't write as good as I talk. Right?
So I stick to the
medium that I know. But I love when I can read certain books that are based off of something and I can feel their story, and those are so captivating to me. And I feel like there isn't anything. Everything is interview based, right? Da, 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 da. This is what they do. You know, like, nothing is ever really told with a story that's unfolding for us to take along in a ride, kind of like what you're describing, which I think is amazing. And I just thought how wonderful you're, like, tying in your best of both worlds right there.
Oh yeah. It feels really fulfilling. I feel like, and I'm really nervous about it. And I was so nervous for the first one, but now that I've had a few, I'm like, okay, I can do this. But sometimes when I take a step back, I'm like, oh my God, what did I just agree to do? What am I putting myself out there in the world to do? And then I have the fear of, what if it's not, you know, just how we were talking about before.
Yeah.
What if it's not good enough? What if they don't like it?
Yeah.
And then I just have to, like, I have to put the blinders on or something and just keep doing it because I believe in it. I just think it's exciting and it brings me joy to do it. So I'm just going to keep doing it and, you know, and let it be what it needs to be.
I feel like that's exactly what I did. And, you know, it's like, and I was telling Jana that I screwed up my very first podcast. And I think I've talked about it before, but I royally screwed it up. And if it wasn't for my husband, you know, pretty much telling me, Don't come on. Just you could just do another, because I was like, I am dumb. I can't believe I did that. What was I thinking? Like, I could never, like, it's so stupid idea. You know, like it, everything, right? It's like, oh, the poor me self-doubt comes in and just takes over, and the shame. And but really, nobody even knew, you know, like what I thought about it. It's only one person. The episode wasn't even out, you know, so like there was only one person that I had to like tuck my tail under, and she didn't care a bit. I interviewed her again, and that was my coach, Julia. But I think, you know, we talk about taking more of those risks and doing things that we love can sometimes be very scary because you just like, is it going to make me money? No, it's not going to make you money. Like, is it going to fulfill your soul? Yes. Is it going to be a little scary to try? For sure. And I feel like you definitely did that. And you have been doing that with a lot of your writing that you've done in the past. Like, I'm just looking at all of that. Like, it's pretty amazing. What kind of advice would you give to anybody who is like thinking about writing?
Just do it. Don't think about it. Just do it. And like, allow yourself to be messy and sloppy. Allow it to be gross and terrible, and then just come back to it like later. I think it just requires like stripping down whatever preconceived notion you have about what good and bad is, and just approaching the blank page and letting it happen, and then sitting away from it, because once it's created, then you're like too close. Sometimes after I write something, I'm way too close to it. It's like my baby. Yeah. And so what I need to do is like step away from it for a little bit and then come back. And then I can see some of the shapes that need to take place, which is actually like, I'm in the process of writing your article right now. And I have like 7 or 8 paragraphs. It's not even close to being finished yet, but I had to step away from it. And then when I come back, it starts to like reveal itself. And I think that oftentimes novice writers, and myself included, I still fall back into this habit. We want to control it so much that we can't allow the piece to become what it needs to be. And if you give over a little bit of that power to the creation itself, it starts to show what it needs. Like certain themes will come up naturally. Yeah. And if you just go into that writing process, allowing yourself the element of surprise to happen, then that is exciting. And then people also feel that element of surprise, and then they can be pulled along like the end of the kite alongside with you as you're making these discoveries, you know?
Yeah.
So, I
think the one time I did write, it was so intimidating for me to tell my story. And then tell it in a short form where I never done anything like that. And I remember, I think at one point, I'm sure I read this or heard it somewhere where somebody who's a writer said something along the lines of, your first draft is never good. So you just keep going. And, you know, like you might have like 16 revisions of it. And then I was like, okay. Like when I thought about it that way, I was like, great, I can't expect the first thing I write to be amazing. And, you know, but I was initially, I was like, how do I start this off? Like, where do I begin? You know, it's like, do I start in the, it was like so many things going on that I had no idea how to tell that story. But I just kept going. And then I did, I cut it down. I took pieces and I moved them around. Like, oh, I should say this here instead of there. And it makes more sense if it's part of this part of the story. But it was such a telling process. Like for me, I like in the end of it, I was like, wow, it was so emotional, one, because I was reliving a lot of those stories very intimately. So a lot of my pain points that I was reliving, and I was like crying at certain points, and it was very cathartic in one way. You know, I think I never really healed from certain parts of it. I just kind of kept trucking forward, and part of that was a way for me to look back in hindsight and see, wow, that is where I was. I was in the lowest part possible. And now it's like, I can't even imagine. It's been so long and I can't even imagine where I am now. But I think writing does that. Like it's journaling and these things, which I think is amazing. And I don't know anybody else who's a writer. Like you're like the only writer I personally know.
Yeah. It wasn't until I went to my MFA program that I met other writers.
And you just thought like that could be your thing. Like I like this. Let me just try it.
Yeah. I realized as I was doing it again, it felt like that's what I was. Like that's what I always was. I just put her away for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that it just comes out. It just kept coming out of me. And I remember when I first started calling myself a writer, how foreign it seemed, but I made the choice. I was like, okay, I'm actively putting, this is what I do. And if these are the things that I do, then I can own this title.
Yeah.
But I remember just being at a restaurant. My husband and I went out with a couple, and I didn't know the woman yet. I was just meeting her, and she's like, well, what do you do for work? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm a full-time student and I'm a writer. And then she was like, well, no, what do you really do for work? And I was like, what do you mean? It was insulting, first of all. On top of that, I just realized that a lot of times people don't understand what goes into writing.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, but I remembered like owning that and it feeling kind of liberating, but also daunting at the same time, because now I'm like, okay, if I am what I do and I'm not doing those things, like if I have it tied up in my identity now, like this is how I interact with the world and how I process my thoughts. And if I'm not writing, like how long can you go without writing
and still be a writer? Right.
Yeah. And I'm also a person who needs deadlines, and I like, I like systems in place to, I like pressure points. I'm a pressure pusher. I like things leveled on me. I want the pressure of moving forward. And I think part of this project as well is being like part of me, like my own selfish, like wanting to fulfill the things that are satisfying for me, which is writing.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about some challenges you've had being a new, well, you're not a new powerlifter anymore. It's been like 3 years.
Yeah, I'm intermediate. I want to say I'm intermediate now. I'm almost high enough to get those pro invites. I don't know what the dots are. I don't know what those dots are yet, but I'm angling.
Usually around, it depends. It's for like the a lot of the WRPF ones are around 450.
It's
anywhere from 425 to 450. It kind of depends.
I think
the drug tested one might be a little different with WRPF, and I'm not sure because they're not my, I just happen to be associated with, you know, Anna, who's associated with WRPF, but you know, I'm associated with USPA. Yeah. You have almost an international elite total though.
I know it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming, and I have almost a 400 dots. So I think I'm going to be, so that's exciting.
That's very exciting.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What was your question though? You said,
what sort of challenges have you had, you know, along the way with being a powerlifter?
I have had the balancing of like life with powerlifting.
Yeah.
I have a 6-year-old and, I work full time as well. So just figuring out how to balance those things. And I know that I am a better mom and a better wife and a better professor and all these other, like these roles that I have, if I fill my cup, and my way of filling my cup is powerlifting. It's the gift I give myself. But the challenges associated with that are sometimes I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter was up in the middle of the night, or it's Sunday and it's nice out and, you know, they're doing things at the house, but I'm doing my squat session, you know, or we go on vacation or something like that. And even if we're only gone for 2 days, I've already figured out where the gym is, my time away. And they're like, wait, they'll still go do stuff too. That's not to say that they're not enjoying their time without me, but I have a lot of the mental pressure of being like, fuck, I'm doing all these, you know, I'm taking away. But when I'm doing it, it feels so necessary while I'm doing it that I don't feel bad about doing it. So that's a challenge that I have to negotiate sometimes. That was one of them. And another one was the weight gain. I mean, it's such a, like you mentioned earlier. So I had my daughter and then I got really, really lean after I had her. And then when I moved to powerlifting, I went from, I was like 115 when I started and now I'm 148.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Like that's a big, and I'm only 5 foot tall. So that's a big jump. So I've had to recalibrate like certain ideas of what I think is beautiful or sexy.
Right.
Like now it's framed or steeped in strength, not necessarily like curves here or a softness here. It's more about a presence and like outside of what the scale says. So that's been challenging. And on top of that, it's challenging because I have obesity in my family. Mm. And so there's this like a nagging reminder of being like, well, I don't want to be like, I felt like I needed to distinguish myself. This weight gain is a choice. I'm making this and I want everyone to know I'm making this choice. But at the same time, not trying to put anyone down by saying like, cause some people are overweight, not of their own, you know, choices.
Yeah.
It's just a hard thing mentally to navigate, I think, especially coming from a family who has obesity in the family.
I mean, it's almost the exact same thing as me. I think I got down to maybe 115, 112, and, I'm 150 right now, and I'm 5'1", you know, so okay. Similar. Come from
so much in common.
I know, it's so crazy. I'm also a redhead, if you guys didn't know. I saw your daughter. I was like, oh, she's so cute. She's a little redhead.
Oh, I love her hair. Oh my gosh.
So cute. Off the subject, but, same thing with me. Like I've always been worried, because my family does have a lot of health issues and a lot of them were related to weight. And, I always thought like, I don't want to have diabetes. I don't want to have, you know, high blood pressure. I don't want to have like my grandma lost her leg, her parents lost their leg. You know what I mean? Like it was like this, mm-hmm. It's very much there. And, I think that especially as a professional in the fitness community, there is a look. And now mm-hmm. that I'm like 10 pounds away from the look I was comfortable with. And I feel like I personally think what's acceptable, you know, I think I struggle with that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, you know, I think there's times where it is going to fluctuate. I think I'm in this part of my life where it has fluctuated higher because I've always been able to stay under 140 without doing much, you know, after having Kaimana, who was 7. But I think that a lot of people struggle with that because you do see your strength go up too. Right. And then it's like, well, I can be in the 148 class. Like I don't have to be in the 132 or the 123 or any of the classes, you know? And I think a lot of us are making peace with that too. Like with the way our bodies look, even some people are making peace with their bodies looking more muscular than they want. Like I have a friend who struggles with that. And she's very strong, but she struggles with her physique being too muscular for what she's comfortable with. And it's interesting, you know, because I think that everybody has their own, you know, whatever that may be. But we're all going down our own path, accepting and using powerlifting to kind of feel better and still feel good about who we are and what our body can do versus what it always looks like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big shift that I had to embrace myself was, the numbers that are going up in the gym, that's the thing that matters more.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm leaving this Saturday and I've already mapped it out. I was like, okay, I got to work up to a 1 rep next week and I'm going to be on vacation. Well, not vacation. I'm going to be gone. So I've already, already mapped it out. Like, all right, where am I going to be there? Where am I going to be? Cause I'm going to be in 2 different states. So I was like, oh man, this is going to be hard. But you have to make certain sacrifices and it's okay. You know, I think that you're talking about when we're talking about filling our cup, that is what you're choosing to fill your cup. And I think a lot of moms struggle with that, you know, that the guilt of it. And it's good that your husband's supportive because he's probably like,
oh yeah. Get your lift on. He's great. Yeah. I feel like I had asked him the other day, he owns a tattoo shop, him and his friend. And I just randomly asked him, I was like, do you think like we would be where we are right now without each other? Like, would he be in this position of like, entrepreneur, you know, and would I be in my position as a professor and like powerlifting and like climbing the ranks in powerlifting? And we both are like, no, I don't, it's like we support each other without stealing from the, I don't know how, I think it like an analogy would be like trees existing right next to each other without one of them stealing, like, we don't have to be in each other's shadow. It's like we both lean to push each other the way we need to push, you know?
That's awesome.
And and so I feel like I'm grateful. Like, I don't think that I would be doing the things I'm doing, you know? I know I wouldn't. So it's nice to have that support at home. And he knows too. He's like, last night we were driving by a Mexican restaurant and we went to the Springs just randomly, you know, and it was like 7 o'clock driving home and I had crock pot food that I had already weighed out earlier. I'm like, okay, I'm hungry, but I'm gonna wait till we get home.
Yeah.
And we drove by this Mexican restaurant and I was like, oh man, I would just love to pull in there and have some margaritas and chips and salsa and just be like a normal person. And he was like, oh, I miss doing those types of things with you. I was like, I know. I'll be normal one day again, but for now we're in the off season. Like, just, I just want a few years of really going down this tunnel.
Totally.
Because I need to know what I can do.
Totally. You have to do, I feel like you, if you don't go down a fully committed route, you know, that you never really know your full potential. Like, I feel like when I work with a lot of people who are powerlifters online, in person, they're pretty committed to their training. You know, like, I would say that, could they be more committed? Yes. There are some people who could be more committed in one aspect or another, but it's never the full package, right? So it's never their nutrition is on point too. That's always the one that's like, did I get enough? And I'm victim of that too, especially moving over from powerlifting, when bodybuilding was so strict for me that powerlifting was almost a way for me to just enjoy fitness again and not have to worry about that. Like, I, you know, we never went out and did those things anymore. Like, I was always the one who would eat before parties and I would have to bring my water. You know, I'd still participate, but they were, you know, a bit harder at times, you know? But I feel like if you don't go fully in like that, you'll never really know, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I just need to chase it for a while, you know, and just see, I don't imagine, I feel like I'll always power lift, but in this degree of like weighing my banana out of the peel, you know, like, I don't know that in 5 or 6 years I will still be doing that part of it as much.
It's enlightening. I'll tell you right now, when you start weighing things that you never weighed before, like, that's how much an apple is, or peanut butter. I was like, dude, that's a serving of peanut butter.
I don't even know. I mean, if it, technically I was probably eating like 14 tablespoons of peanut butter in a sitting.
Yeah. I stopped eating peanut butter and peanuts and nuts because I would always overestimate. And I would weigh it, but then it was like not worth it to me. I'm like, screw it. I'll get my fat from something else.
Yeah, I know. It's never worth it. And I don't want to go over on my sugar I don't even do the peanut butter unless I have, when I'm bulking. I mean, bring it, but but I'm not bulking right now. So I just steer clear of the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Or on occasion, if I have some extra fat at night, but I usually don't have the carbs left over at night. So I'll eat cheese sometimes as my treat.
There you go.
Oh yeah.
That's great.
No cheese. I love it.
I can't eat cheese. I'm all lactose intolerant now. So it's
sad.
I know. Cheese is not as bad as like milk and milky stuff. So like ice cream. I can't drink whey. Like, I had a whey shake yesterday because I ran out of my bougie pure paleo bone broth protein, which is like $90 a freaking 30-day serving. But my stomach is not bad with it. So I ran out of that and I did whey and I'm like, it was not good. Stomach is just all jacked up. So I was like, nope, skip that. Okay, so this is the part of the show where I ask everybody,
what the hell is wrong with you people?
What the hell was I thinking? Where you think back to a time when, hopefully in your powerlifting, but it does not have to be, where you think, what the fuck was I thinking doing that?
Oh, yeah, I already got it.
Oh, God, what is it?
I read the email and I'm like, oh, wait, I took notes on things just to make sure. That's how I process. My very first meet, I was competing in the 123. I think USAPL goes to 123. Weight class, and I was a few pounds over. And it was just my first meet, but I still had it in my head that I needed to be under the weight. So I didn't eat carbs, I had very little carbs for like 3 days before my first powerlifting meet.
Oh my gosh.
And it was so stupid. I did make weight and I ended up placing, I got third out of, I don't know, like 5 or 6 people or something like that. But if I just weighed in naturally and I would have been the next weight class up, I think I would have taken first, because either there was only like one or two like other newbies, or there weren't a lot of women at all. So it was the powerlifting without the carbs. I felt terrible. I was so sore in places. I didn't even realize I had muscles just because I just didn't have carbs to process my.
Did you try to eat carbs after you weighed in?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, but it was only a 2-hour weigh-in.
Oh, that's right. Cause it's USAPL.
With USAPL, which was one of the reasons why I'm like, I like USPA better. Like that 24-hour. Definitely am on the heavier side and I drop it and then I'll gain another 6 pounds.
Yeah. That is, you know, I feel like a lot of people do that though. They do exactly that. Like I'm sure I did. I can't even remember because I remember it was so long ago, you know, when it was untested, I mean, unfit, really crappy fed. But I remember being like, oh, I need to eat this and this, like no concept of really any good nutrition. But a lot of people do that just to make weight. And 2 hours, you ain't doing shit. You ain't getting nothing back. Did you feel like weak while you lifted?
Oh, yeah. I felt really weak while lifting. I didn't get my third deadlift and it wasn't even that heavy of a weight. Yeah. I didn't get any of my third attempts. I was fizzled out. And that was, you know, that was pretty much it. It was just, I felt like shit that day.
Yeah.
And I'll never do that again. Like now I do the really long, slow process of making weight.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're weighing your peanut butter, not having no margaritas.
No margaritas. Not yet.
That's good. It's post, I always take a whiskey shot. I actually did not take one in my last meet, but I always try to take a whiskey shot. And then a few of my friends from Texas, we used to go out to eat after and we'd take tequila shots. And, they're my wonderful Mexican friends. So they were like, you know, it was great. So it's been like a tradition to have a drink after.
So fun.
It is. Yeah. It makes it fun. It's like, you know, all those marathons where they have wine and beer after.
Everybody's I did that before too. It's terrible. Oh yeah. I'll never do that again either. That's another one was I think.
Oh, Jenna, this has been fantastic. And thank you so much for taking your time and telling your story and really sharing with me. I wanted to hear more about your writing and all that you do. I think it's amazing. And I can't wait to read more articles on the site. So any of you listening, you can see some of the interviews she's already done and Sisters of Iron underneath their blog. I believe it's on their blog and their main page too, because I was looking at it.
Yeah.
But you can read more about her there. And I want to thank you again for coming on and doing this all with me. It's been wonderful.